Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, he directed you, Dan Dibley, last week to work on your material. Did you?
Oh, I did. Yeah. And I've got a couple for him. But I'm going to wait, though, Greg, because we've got serious.
We doing a little stand-up comedy today, guys?
Yeah. Maybe at the end, yeah. Sir, but we've got some serious football to talk. We got some 21 personnel. We got some George Kittle blocking to talk about. We need to get deep in the weeds, Greg.
How about Jimmy Butler going 16 for 16 from the free throw line?
Let's talk about it, Greg. Let's break down those dubs.
I can appreciate it because I was a 90% free throw shooter in college, so I can appreciate it.
Wow. Is the free throw the single easiest act in all of pro sports?
I can't speak to all pro sports, you know. All I know is I was a good free throw shooter. Yeah, I was a good shooter overall.
I feel like that was a divisive comment, Dan.
It really wasn't. Yeah,
like the guy says he's really good at free throws, and your next comment is, isn't that the easiest thing to do in all of sports? That's divisive.
It's the most unguarded act outside of the serve in tennis and the tee shot in golf. The ball is not moving. You control it, and it's a 15-footer repeatable.
That's why, guys, it's funny you said that. That's why I could never play golf, because I just couldn't rationally understand why you couldn't hit a perfect shot all the time because the ball is not moving. I mean, I played baseball, and I couldn't intellectually understand why I couldn't hit a line drive every time. So imagine how I felt about playing golf where the ball doesn't move. You know,
I mean, having you, exactly. I would pay Greg to hear you break down after a golf shot, like what happened and why the ball went off into the trees.
Well, you probably don't want to pay for that because I would have no idea. But, you know, I actually played golf when I was like 10 or 11 years old, and I was pretty good at it. But then I discovered basketball. So because I'd always played baseball, but golf fell by the wayside.
There you go. He was a free throw machine. He's Greg Cosell from NFL Films. All right. As Dan said, let's talk some football here, I guess, if
all
we
right,
have to.
Let's do that.
No, I mean, obvious question. Why'd they run the ball so well, Greg?
I mean, I think there's a couple of factors. First of all, I think the Kittle factor is huge. I think the fact that he can block on the outside one-on-one allowed for a lot more double teams inside in the run game. And I think when you get those double teams, obviously you can move people. I mean, keep in mind in this game, how many runs came inside? Almost 65% of McCaffrey runs versus the Falcons came inside between the tackles. That was the foundation of the 49ers run game. And, of course, we know they're a base personnel offense. So 17 of McCaffrey's 24 rushes came out of 21, 22, and 12 personnel. So it was just a really strong effort. And I think you know, what Kittle brings to the table. And there's a lot of plays where he didn't necessarily make a block where he went, wow, that's George Kittle. He's the reason for the play. But he's capable of blocking edge defenders, first-level edge defenders, one-on-one.
And is the Kittle threat as much a part of this to where, you know, he's out there and you've got Juszczyk, who can either be in the backfield or on the line of scrimmage. But the fact that Kittle's out there, does that give the defense a little bit more of a pause to where they can't totally sell out for the run?
I mean, I certainly don't know. That's a hard question to answer because you don't know what's in their mind and how the defensive coordinator is preparing to do that. But, you know, I think, obviously, I don't even think Kittle was targeted in the game. It was an odd game because this was not Mac Jones' best game by any stretch of the imagination, but they so physically dominated up front in the run game. I mean, they physically beat up the Falcons. And they do some really cool things with motion. They use this kind of Juszczyk's return motion where he was kind of in a wing alignment. Then he would start in the backfield. Then he'd return and go back. I mean, they get to runs in a very creative way. You know, they get to base runs in very creative ways because there's not 500 runs. So it's just a matter of how you choose to get to them, who you use to make the blocks. Is there motion? Is there not? You know, Kyle Shanahan's always been an absolute master at doing those kinds of things. But, you know, as I said, Mac Jones, and it turned out, look, they only scored 20 points and the final touchdown came late in the game, right after a play call that was clearly specific to that situation when they hit McCaffrey, I think, for 17 yards on 3rd and 13. But like I said, this was just not Mac Jones at his best. I didn't think he was the higher level post-snap operator that usually defines his play. I thought his eyes were not in the right place sometimes, but that happens. I mean, you know, I think what a lot of people forget, because quite frankly, there's only 17 games. So people want their team to be great for 17 games. You know, every guy to be great. That's just a really hard thing to do in the NFL. So sometimes you have to win different ways. If you can only win one way, it's hard to be a really good team. You know, it's just not going to happen that way every week. You can't just win one way every week.
Greg, I bet a lot of our listeners are thinking to themselves, wait a minute, I'd love to hear more about why you saw this as maybe not Mac Jones' best week, because I think the perception for most is, well, not a whole lot was asked of him because they ran the ball so well. And the two only, like, I think, pass plays that Niner fans remember wanting back are the interception, which was on Juwan right off of his hands,
right,
and DeMarcus
right.
Robinson had the drop. So what did right. you see Mac not do well, I guess, in this game?
Well, like I said, I thought that, and this is my interpretation, maybe Kyle Shanahan would say I'm wrong, and that could very well likely be the case. But I thought, to me, there were times I thought his eyes were not necessarily in the right place quickly enough based on the route concept versus the coverage. And I remember, you know, I worked for years with Ron Jaworski, and he would always tell me, he said, there were two games a year where for whatever reason, I just didn't see it the right way. And I always remembered that statement. To me, Mac Jones, look, I doubt they went into this game. No coach goes into a game. You guys know this. You've been doing this long enough to know that. No coach goes into a game and tells the quarterback, you know what, we're not going to ask you to do very much this week. No coach goes into a game saying that. Now, obviously, they wanted to come out and run the ball, and it was very effective. But keep in mind, they only scored two touchdowns. And like I said, the final touchdown came with, what, less than 3 minutes to go in the game. It was a one-score game with 3 minutes to go. So there's no way we can look at the result, and once we have access to the result, it's easy to say a whole lot of things, but there's no way that Kyle Shanahan went into the game saying, hey, Mac, you're not going to have to do very much this week, you know, so don't worry about it. He didn't say that.
No, but when he needed to make that play, and I want you to walk us through that 3rd and 13 that you've referenced now twice, where it's CMC who is able to break free. By my eye, Atlanta only rushed 3. They dropped 8 into coverage. What happened on that play that made McCaffrey able to get in and get that touchdown?
Yeah, well, that was basically an empty set. And what they've been doing with McCaffrey, and they've started this the last couple of years, is they line him up in kind of, I'm sure they have a name for it, I don't know what it is, but they line him up kind of offset wide, but a deep slot. Okay, I'm sure you can picture it because they do this a lot. So it's essentially an empty set. And I think one of the reasons they do that with McCaffrey is because instead of just having him in the normal offset position in the backfield, when you release from there, a team can disrupt him. They can jam him with a defensive end, you know, and what I always called the bullseye technique. So now when you put him out there, he can't be disrupted in his route. So what the Falcons did is they essentially – they played man-to-man coverage just on the outside receivers and then played five zone defenders inside. And the play was designed for McCaffrey. He ran the seam inside of safety Bates, who ended up sort of being a deep third defender the way the Falcons played the coverage. And the secondary read was Kittle. Kittle was running a sit route right in front of Mac Jones. And Mac Jones saw the linebacker, Caden Ellis, turn his body inside. And as soon as Ellis turned his body inside, he could not play the throw to McCaffrey. And McCaffrey had the leverage on Bates, who was outside of him. So it became, in some ways, pitch and catch. Now, I think the Falcons may have only had 10 defenders on the field,
but
I'm not
correct.
Sure.
No, that is correct, yeah. Greg. And I wonder how you saw that affecting the outcome of the play.
Yeah, I mean, they were missing a player. So they were missing a pass rusher. They weren't missing a coverage player. They were missing a pass rusher.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us as we go through not only last week's game with the Niners, but also what's coming up, which is the Houston Texans. Before we do any of that, let's go to the other side of the ball, because I think Niner fans were really pleasantly surprised that the pass rush seemed to return. So, A, what did you see them do there? And, B, what is it going to mean to now do it without Bryce Huff?
He's definitely out, huh?
Yep, he's going to be out. It sounds like maybe at least a couple weeks, but definitely this one.
Huh. Well, it's funny, because for the second consecutive game, they relied a high percentage of the time on their four-man D-line pass rush. They did not really blitz a lot. They only rushed five or more on seven of Penix's 42 dropbacks. Now, the blitz was effective when they did it. We'll see with Huff out if Robert Saleh decides that he needs to blitz more. But they played a lot more of man coverage, cover one, in this game than had been their season average through the first six games. Now, that may have been team-specific, because the Falcons, I mean, London's a nice receiver, but he's not necessarily a vertical threat, so it could have been a function of the Falcons lacking big-time wide receivers, and also Penix essentially being a pure pocket quarterback who's not necessarily going to beat you with his legs. So that could have been opponent specific, but I thought they used stunt concepts really effectively. I think they deployed more, a higher volume of stunt concepts than they normally do, and I thought they had really good success. The other thing that I think is really worth pointing out is I thought Bethune really showed up on film. I thought he played really, really well.
Yeah, they were aggressive, certainly. And the one thing I was looking at, Greg, and maybe you can either corroborate or deny, but it looked like when they did blitz, they were doing a lot more of the traditional zone blitz, where two guys would be added and two defensive linemen would be dropping to try to confuse the quarterback. Is that what you saw, and is that something that might work against C.J. Stroud?
Yeah, I mean, those very often when you do that, you still end up rushing four, and those are usually called simulated pressures, because what a simulated pressure is when you still rush four, not more, but just four, but one or more of the rushers is a second or third level defender, and you have defensive linemen drop out. So, you know, that can be confusing. You can do that sometimes, too, when you understand how a team protects, and you can get a pass rusher on maybe a linebacker on a running back, because just the way they protect and you understand that. In fact, there was a play in this game. There might have been a penalty on it on the 49ers, but there was a pass rush by Bethune where he just blew up and ran through Bijan Robinson. And yet, I believe there was an illegal contact penalty called on Lenore on that play, so it didn't necessarily count, but it was there. It's there on the film. But there's multiple ways to pressure the quarterback where you don't have to rush five or six. And, you know, I think they'll do that this week because, quite frankly, the Texans' offense right now is not very good at all, and neither is C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that for sure, especially they may be down their best receiver. Nico Collins is in the concussion protocol. One more on the Niner offense, though. There's been so much made about their interior offensive line struggling. Jake Brendel goes out. Matt Hennessy comes in, and it looked like the returns were pretty good. What did you see there?
Yeah. Well, I think it's the way they played, too, that was really effective because, as I said, there were a lot more double teams. And I think when you do that, you really help your O-line. I think Colby went out for some snaps as well, and I forget who came in and played for him, but I know he was out for, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 snaps.
It was Nick Zakel who came in,
Right, right. So, so yeah, I think it just helped, you know, when you double team, you help your O-line. So this was the best O-line performance in the run game of the season, clearly. I mean, we saw it right from the start. I mean, McCaffrey didn't break one for 30 or 40 yards, but I'm sure he had a number of 10-plus yard runs in the game, which he did. And you could see right away that he just, you know, he was getting through the first level of the defense pretty cleanly. There was a lot of clearance on a lot of those runs.
And defensively, no Bosa and no Fred Warner. And you mentioned Tatum Bethune and D. Winters was pretty formidable as well. What did you think Niner front seven in general against a team that normally is able to do a lot more on the ground?
Yeah, and the thing that was surprising to me, and, you know, some games this is just what happens with coaches, is it kind of gets away from them. It snowballs. In a game that was close, They had Penix drop back, you know, over 40 times, and they only gave the ball to Bijan Robinson 14 times. You know, and as I said, sometimes that just gets away from teams as the game progresses. But I would have thought they would have given the ball to Robinson more, even Algier. I mean, they have a very good run game with two backs, and Robinson is arguably, to me, the best back in the league right now. But they didn't do that. So I think that helped the Niners, quite frankly.
Hey, Greg, what's going on with the Houston Texans offensive line? Just a layman's view. They look terrible so far this year.
Yeah, they haven't been good, and that's impacted Stroud. It started last year, so it's really impacted Stroud because he's truly a pocket quarterback at his core. So now he's been hesitant. He's been tentative. I think he's anticipating that he's going to get pressure, so he starts to play fast physically, and that slows down his mental process. So right now he's not seeing things with the needed clarity and quickness that he did as a rookie 2 years ago when it looked like he was on his way to being a great player. There's times he, quite frankly, looks a little lost in the pocket. He's just not a comfortable player. So obviously the O-line is a factor, but the bottom line result is Stroud is a truly uncomfortable player right now who's just not seeing it the way he has to, and he's just playing very fast physically.
And would you look at that regression? And I think he has regressed, and I don't want to get all fantasy football on you, but I had him last year on my team, and he regressed last year, and this year he looks even worse. Would you say it's the offensive line, the scheme around him? What would you pinpoint from what you see on film as to why C.J. Stroud has taken a step back, Greg?
Well, I think the offensive line part, you know, I think when you're a quarterback and you feel and your O-line is not functioning at the level it needs to consistently, I think it's just human nature. You probably start to anticipate that you're going to be pressured. And since you don't have a lot of time anyway, that starts to speed you up physically. And believe it or not, there's an inverse correlation there. When you speed up physically, you can't slow down mentally. You know, the great quarterbacks, you know, you hear it all in all sports. You hear it in basketball. You hear in all sports that, oh, the game slowed down, you know. And when you're feeling like, boy, I've got to play fast physically, it's hard for the mental part to slow down. And I think that's, again, I'm interpreting what I see on film. I can't say for sure what's in C.J. Stroud's head, but I think that that's he's clearly just looking at him, watching the tape. He's just playing too fast.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films with us on Willard and Dibbs. I do like the Houston defense, and obviously this is D'Amico Ryans against Robert Saleh here in a way. I know that obviously they're not going head-to-head, but do these defenses, do they look similar to you when you look at them on film?
I think that D'Amico Ryans, and again, maybe I'm wrong, but I think D'Amico Ryans, since he's been in Houston, has done a little more on third down than Robert Saleh does. Now, that could also be just a function of personnel, but I think he's a little more aggressive with pressure concepts on third down than normally Robert Saleh is. But I'm sure there's a lot of terminology that's the same. You know, when you play this team, and again, this is a classic case where you have a quick timing and rhythm pass game of the 49ers where the ball, if everything is working properly, the ball comes out because they've got two edge rushers in Hunter and Anderson. Anderson is one of the top three speed to power rushers in this league, and he's going to go up against Colton McKivitz, who at times struggles in one-on-one protection.
But listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
But if the Niners are playing their game, and part of playing their game means they're running the ball with sustainability, then Mac Jones can be a quick timing rhythm thrower and not have a lot of deeper drops where the pass rush becomes a big factor in the game.
Looking at Houston on tape, Greg, does this match up for the 49ers to have another run-heavy game? I'm looking at some of the advanced metrics, and it looks like Houston has one of the better pass defenses, but their run defense is kind of middle of the road. Would you look at the film and think, not that you're Shanahan, you would never put yourself in his mind, I know that, but looking at the film, do you see this as maybe a more run-heavy approach for the Niners based on what you've seen?
Well, I think my sense, guys, is that they want to run every week as a foundation. You rarely see the Niners by choice. I'm saying by choice, where they're in control of a game, have the quarterback throw 45 times by choice. You know, some games dictate if you're behind or if just the flow of a game, you get into a certain flow. But I don't think that they too often, if I don't want to say if ever, that would be silly, but I don't think they think in terms of, you know what, this is a throw ball game for us. I don't think they think like that. I think they believe they're a base personnel offense, predominantly with two backs in McCaffrey and Juszczyk, and I think they feel now that certainly with Kittle being there, that they can put together a creative run game, working off a lot of the base concepts that they run, and that they can control the game, control the pace and tempo, sustain offense, and have Mac Jones work off of that. Now, again, are you going to get to third and long? Of course. You know, every game has some third and longs. But I don't think they're going to come out and think, oh, no, we got to toss it around the yard. I don't think they ever think like that.
Did you see on film, speaking of Kittle, who had two targets, no catches, was that just sort of circumstantial, or did you see that the Niners were actually holding him back to be a blocker more often than not and help that run game?
My guess is it's somewhat circumstantial. I don't know that for a fact, you know, because I don't know how they put together the offense. But, you know, because they're not truly a passing team in a strict sense where it's like three, four guys have to get a bunch of targets in any given week, I think that game just played out that way. Look, I would imagine based on what happened up to this game, this past game that against the Falcons, I would doubt that anybody thought, right, that McCaffrey was going to go 24 for 129, right? Did you guys think that that was going to be the case based on what happened in, you know, up to this point in the season? Probably not.
I had him for 134 yards, yeah. Greg. That was my prediction.
And actually, Greg, I don't ever try to make these prognostications. I just really rely on the film.
There you go. But, yeah, I don't think that anybody thought that they would. Now, they came out to control the game like that. I mean, clearly that was their game plan. And it worked. Now, there's always a plan B, guys. What happens if McCaffrey was gaining 1-2 yards on every run early in the game? There's always a plan B.
Yep.
Of course there is.
Yep.
But
oh, yeah.
They didn't need to get to the plan B really very much in this game, just the way it played out. But their defense had a lot to do with that as well, because their defense didn't give up a lot of points. So they could stay with what plan A was.
Greg, just great stuff as always.
Oh, awesome, Greg.
Even though I thought that maybe that was a little bit of a courtesy laugh for Dibs there, but other than that.
No, it was sincere.
Okay.
It was sincere.
I worked on my material, Greg. Yeah. I worked on it.
Yeah, it was sincere. Thank you. Liked it.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, I liked it because it was organic, you know. You can't work on that stuff. You know, it has to just be organic.
That's right. You just have to be ready.
Yeah.
And then you know, when opportunity knocks, you gotta knock it out of the park.
Exactly.
No doubt. Yeah.
All right. Exactly.
Okay, Greg, more opportunities coming up next week. Thank you so much as always.
All right, guys, appreciate it. Thank you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radnor, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.